If you love true crime and dark stories, then you'll love our other podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.
He told them that in the year prior to Bundy's move to Utah, she had discovered objects that she couldn't understand in her house and in Bundy's apartment. These items included crutches and a meat cleaver that was never used for cooking.
Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts.
You know, then this guy gets rich and he has some issues with sexual addiction.
Yeah, and control.
Yeah.
The Keith Raniere story.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts and don't miss a single episode.
In some ways, it starts to make things like Jeffrey Dahmer and that look tame, not in terms of the brutality of what they performed, but in terms of the psychology and manipulation of people.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Available wherever you download podcasts.
The world is filled with mysteries, many of which have been solved. Yet, most people have no idea. Today, we examine some of the world's most famous mysteries on Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Cautionary Tales. Stories that are passed down or around. But are they always true? Do we really know their true meaning or intent? This is the podcast where we dive into cautionary tales, superstitions, mysteries, and more to discover the truth behind the tale. This is Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Welcome to the show! Don't forget to press the subscribe button. It's me, Harper Brewski, and my dad, Tony Brewski, my co-host. Dad,
yeah.
Have you ever had a mystery that has not been solved?
Like, happened to me personally?
Yes.
Something that I still wonder about to this day?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm trying to think.
It could be anything.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think.
Like the ghost cat.
Yeah, I guess that would be one. I don't know what that was, where I felt like there was a cat that jumped on my bed after my cat had died.
Ghost.
Although I think it was the ghost cat, but I can't definitively prove that. I don't know. I honestly, there's nothing that stands out to me. I'm a very much a problem-solving oriented human being. So if there's something that kind of arises in my life ever that I can't figure out, I pretty much go on a quest to figure it out. And I can't say I have any lingering mysteries that I'm wondering about.
I'm the same thing. Why do you think I like this water bottle so much?
Why do you like your water bottle so much?
Because it like...
It's a mystery how to open it because it's set up very bizarre.
Yes.
And all of the writing on the box is in some language I can't understand. And
Chinese, Dad.
Oh, I know that, but I couldn't read any of it. And I'm wondering, let's hope it's not made with lead.
It's not made with lead, Dad. Jesus Christ.
You never know. You never know. There's a lot of products you got to keep an eye on.
It's a kid's water bottle.
I know. And here's the thing, honey. There's a lot of products that come out of other countries that don't have regulations so much on what you can and can't put in products. It's a matter of us catching it here if it's safe or not. But that looks like a pretty decent one.
I got it off of Amazon.
That doesn't matter. And that could be a mystery right there. Things you've bought off of Cautionary Tales, things that you've bought off of Amazon that turned out to be dangerous. Because anybody can sell anything on Amazon. So just
wait, you can sell stuff on Amazon?
I could sell lead water bottles on Amazon if I wanted to. Now, eventually, someone would probably catch on you're selling lead water bottles and poisoning people. But and then you'd be in trouble. But you could probably get quite a few lead water bottles into circulation before you get caught.
Is Amazon like eBay?
No, it's eBay is a bidding system, but you can create your own Amazon store and then sell whatever products you want on there. And if you're selling good products and you rise in the rankings and you get more sales and all that. So yeah, you could start your own Amazon store if you wanted to and sell inappropriate ornaments or something. That would be a great website. Inappropriate ornaments.
By Harper.
And all it is just inappropriate ornaments.
They could buy.
That's a great idea.
We'll look at that later tonight.
I just gave you an idea for a business.
yes, you did.
So today on the program, these famous mysteries, things that a lot of the public for a lot of history thought was fact, what thought was real. And then later on, they discover, oh, you mean that's not what happened? It's not Mandela effect type things, but just, you know, I guess information that gets repeated and repeated and repeated. And eventually you have a large group of people believing it. And then they do crazy things. Oh, wait. That's a different thing. Maybe they don't do crazy things, but they just, you know,
change it up.
They think that what they had heard was factual. And there was a point in time when a lot of these happened. There wasn't the internet. There wasn't social media. It was just kind of word of mouth. And that's how things spread around. And that's why it took so much longer for things to get cleared up. But eventually they did get cleared up because people used to accept facts as part of reality. So that was the difference in our post-fact land that we're in today. How about, you know, have you ever heard of people who fake their death? You ever heard of that? Or the theories of people who have faked their death? Quite often it happens. I don't think there's been anybody in your lifetime that has died. And then people thought, they faked it. But there's been some in mine, and eventually there will be some in yours. Quite often it happens with a beloved public figure, you know, musician, whatever it may be, that people really, they love them so much. And the thought of this individual not being there anymore is really too much to bear. So what does the mind starts to bargain. We go through grief and there's different stages, and one of them is bargaining. And sometimes people get kind of stuck on that, especially if it can be something fantastical or somebody that's not a living family member, but like a celebrity they've never met, somebody they like. And sometimes their mind can get stuck on that bargaining area. And then it gets to the area of, oh, well, they didn't die. They faked their death, and they never kind of get through that and accepting, no, this person has died. Elvis Presley, there was those rumors about Tupac Shakur, Andy Kaufman. There's a lot of people that the people will come up with these theories, conspiracy theories of people faking their deaths. Yeah.
Who would want to fake their death?
Well, that's where the conspiracy theories come in. In many cases, it's someone in public life that may already be in somewhat of an amount of turmoil. Maybe they want to escape the limelight. They don't want to be a celebrity anymore. They just want to live in peace and away from everything. And then people sometimes believe that they fake their death. Elvis, Tupac, like I said, people like that. But in reality, those people, they just died. But there's another one that actually was a theory way before, and there was actually a big story to it. Her name was Anastasia Romanov. And here's the story of what happened here. It's a hard one to get through, but, one of the earliest subjects of these theories, Princess Anastasia Romanov, daughter of the slain Tsar Nicholas II of Russia. In Anastasia's case, the circumstances of her demise and its aftermath helped spread these rumors. When a Bolshevik revolution toppled the Tsar government in March 15th of 1917, the Bolsheviks captured the Romanovs, including Anastasia. This is a group of people. This is another country, another political group that came in and took this family.
Is it like the mafia?
No, it's war. So it's like you've captured your prisoners, took them to a remote location in the Ural Mountains and executed the whole family. The executioners offered conflicting and confusing accounts of what happened in the house, but more importantly, the Romanovs' bodies went missing for decades. The lack of physical proof of their demise allowed rumors to propagate, leading more credence to these theories. Multiple people in the subsequent years claimed to be long-lost heirs to the Romanov fortune, and one woman claimed to be Anastasia herself. In 1920, a Polish-German woman named Franziska, I can't say her last name, told the German press that she was the ill-fated princess and fought for years to legally be recognized as such. She eventually moved to the United States and came to be known as Anna Anderson, and she insisted she was Anastasia until her passing in 1984. So she lived this whole life saying that she is this girl that was part of this family, and she somehow escaped the execution. And people believed her. Well, thanks to more recent technology, which came out a little bit later than that, DNA evidence, where you can take a look at this and go, genetically, is she connected to this family?
And what did DNA say?
Well, thanks to DNA, it's one theory that can be scientifically tested. The Romanov remains were discovered in 1979, and they were finally tested after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991. The test proved that the five bodies belonged to Nicholas II, his wife, Alexandra, and three of their daughters, Anastasia, Olga, and Tatiana. For good measure, the scientists in 1994 also tested Anderson's DNA and proved she was not a Romanov. But hey, if you come out of a country in conflict and it happens that the leadership has all died and you're claiming to be the lost daughter of this, you can pull that off for a little bit. I had a I actually have an interesting story that it's not the Romanovs, but when I was a kid, my aunt, Nancy, lived in, she still lives in Chicago, and they, in their neighborhood, their neighbor behind them, I believe, claimed that she was the princess of a country, and I won't say the country, but, was the princess of a specific country. And if I said it, people would recognize it. And that their, family went into exile because it was taken over by another government and she had escaped. She was almost kind of like this type of deal. And it was this real fantastical story. And I met her a couple times and she really, it was kind of weird because it's like, well, clearly she is from this country and she has a lot of really kind of weird trinkets, if you will, and kind of things that were like numbered very specifically. But it was just weird that she was kind of living in this specific neighborhood in Chicago. She claimed that she was like in the witness protection and all that. But why would you be telling your neighbors that you were the princess? And anyway, they would be able to get in specific liquors and stuff from their country through customs in Coca-Cola 2-liter bottles. It was like lighter fluid. But it was like, well, how are they getting this through customs? Anyway, it was a really weird story. I don't know what ever happened to the woman. I remember that she came to my aunt's wedding. And it was the last time I saw her in the early 90s. But it, I don't know if there was ever anybody connecting those dots, especially at this day and age. I wish I knew more because I could probably Google it and find it out. It's something I should ask her sometime. Not Aunt Chris. It's her sister. I don't think you ever met her sister. Yeah. So there you go. Kind of a weird story.
Runaway princess.
Yeah. Right. It sounds like a bad Hallmark movie, doesn't it?
It does.
This fall on Hallmark Channel, Candace Cameron Bure stars in Runaway Princess. You know.
Either that or a twisted version of Cinderella.
Yeah. Here's one. The Death Valley Sailing Stones. They don't move on their own. We've talked about this on an episode, haven't
we? Yeah. Cautionary Tales.
Well, this is Cautionary Tales, but a different number of the episode.
Yes.
So the race track playa is a flat, dry lake bed in the middle of the desert with the lowest elevation in North America. It's also home to these mysterious sailing stones. They've baffled visitors since the early 1900s to an untrained observer. It looks like these stones have moved across the surface of the lake bed entirely on their own. It's like a path has been like carved in the sand, almost like an animal did it, but there's no footprints. So it looks like the rock has been moving. And they're big rocks. I mean, these are like rocks sometimes that you look and go, a person really probably couldn't push that very easily.
Can you show me a picture of the rocks on the screen?
Yeah.
Oh God, that's a big rock.
Yeah, that is a, yeah. So
compare it to our Alexa in the living room, probably the rock is bigger.
Yeah, this is like a boulder type size thing. The picture might be kind of deceiving in terms of size. Anyway, they can leave traces up to 1,500 feet long without any sign of human or animal interference. Many theories have been offered to explain the phenomena, including strong winds, the pull of Earth's magnetic field, a prankster, aliens. But thanks to a devoted team of scientists, we now know why these stones move. 2011 is when we figured it out. Researchers from the Scripps Institute of Oceanology attached GPS devices to 15 rocks and let the monitor on them. 2 years later, they returned to the site and were lucky enough to find witnesses to the phenomenon in person. When Death Valley receives a rare winter rainstorm, it can pool on the flat lake bed and freeze overnight, creating large panes of ice around the rocks. In the morning, the ice thaws and cracks into large sheets, and a light gust of wind is all that it needs to move the ice across the lake bed surface. The ice sheets push the rocks across the lake bed and then melt, leaving nothing behind but the rocks and their tracks. Scientists called the phenomenon ice shoving. One of them jokingly described the study as the most boring experiment ever.
This can't be wind, because some of these rocks are actually going in zigzag motion.
Well, wind does change direction. So it's one of those things where it's on a slick surface. You've ever had it where you have like a glass cup and you put it on a counter and it's the sweat on it, specifically in summer, usually the sweat on the cup, you know, gets onto the surface and then the cup almost starts sliding by itself. It's kind of that sort of a theory.
Yeah, but yet again, these things like do patterns. Like it'll be like,
well, the breeze will influence where that rock goes because it's on a slippery surface. So if you put something on a slippery surface, something on ice, and you had a strong wind, that thing would slide across the ice based on the wind. And the wind changes direction, so does the object. So that's how it creates those interesting paths. It's just such a thin layer of ice that makes it so interesting for how far it can go without like a whole, you know, frozen lake bed or something. So that's what creates the tracks, which is really interesting. Have you, I don't think you've seen this before, but there's a lot of places around the country, around the world really, where they have these gravity defying mystery spots. We've gone on many a road trip, and I think there's been some where we've seen the big roadside sign that says mystery spot 5 miles that way. You probably couldn't read yet. There's a lot of roadside attractions. They've been around since like the 50s.
Can I see one?
Yeah, we'll talk about it here and I'll show you.
No, like a picture.
Well, I'll get to it in a minute. So keep in mind, no one else can see on the show. So we got to focus on what we're talking about.
I know, but I want to see.
And I will show you. So there's a lot of these things around the country, or at least there was. They're getting less and less popular, but still some are running. They're tourist attractions, like the Santa Barbara Mystery Spot. It would have you believe that Earth is full of areas in which the laws of physics don't apply. If you go inside one of these so-called mystery spots, you'll see strange phenomena like balls that appear to roll uphill, or people standing on an incline perfectly upright without leaning. It looks like they should topple over, but somehow they don't. At least a dozen of these mystery spots have opened around the U.S. since the 1930s, baffling thousands of visitors each year without an obvious scientific explanation. People have speculated that mystery spots are caused by anything from the Bermuda Triangle to anti-gravitational forces influenced by UFOs. Well, it's not quite. Like the Flying Dutchman of many spots are another optical illusion. Simple cause. Unlike those mysteries, mystery spots are purportedly designed to create the effect. In 1998, a group of Berkeley psychologists studied these mystery spots and concluded that they rely on the assumption our brains make when viewing objects. Our brain helps us orient ourselves horizontally and vertically in space by using the horizon as a reference point. When humans can't see the horizon, our brains use the immediate surroundings. Mystery spots, like the one in Santa Barbara, are built on hillsides, and their designs are purposely skewed to fool the eye. So people are simply standing upright. It's the house that's skewed around it. And here's a picture of one of them where it looks like she's standing upright. It's not the greatest picture, but when you're there in person, it would be very bizarre because your brain is trying to tell you that that house is not crooked, but it really is. And so it can be rather disorienting. I guess I'm kind of shocked that it took till 1998 rather for somebody to finally go and say, here's what that is. That wasn't that long ago, really. I mean,
someday you're going to have to take me to some of these mystery spots.
Oh, we'll go. We will go and we'll have We'll have some fun, and you'll debunk it for all the families in line behind us. It's amazing, Mom. What is this? Listen here. I talked about it on my show when I was 8. It'll be a real awkward moment.
It's all optical illusions, kids.
Yeah.
No magic here. Throw away all your Peter Pan books.
Chemtrails are another thing that are kind of one of those conspiracy theorist type things. People claim chemtrails are this or that. What's a chemtrail? It's that path of smoke you see behind jets. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Up in the sky. Like, what is that? That's called a chemtrail. Chemtrails are caused by hot plane exhaust quickly freezing in cold upper atmosphere. So here's what the reality is of chemtrails. Americans are particularly susceptible to falling for medical conspiracy theories or theories that suggest the U.S. government is secretly using public health programs to control or even poison our citizenry. These theories tend to pop up whenever a new public health initiative is introduced, like water fluoridation, vaccination, or contact tracing during a pandemic, because it's easier to believe insane things than accept reality.
Yeah. Because that's their life now.
So what are these conspiracies? Why are they so popular? One explanation is that they're a reaction to the modern health worries that we all have to be concerned about. Advances in technology, transportation, x-rays, food preservation can often lead to health problems, pollution, cancer, things like that. Studies have found that the more people are afraid of new technology and its associated health risks, the more likely they are to believe in medical conspiracy theories. This is how some people believe the chemtrail theory, or the idea that the government is secretly dumping chemicals on the American public using jet engine exhaust. According to chemtrail believers, there are many reasons why the government is doing this. Some think chemtrails control the weather. Some think the government uses chemtrails to test how harmful certain chemicals are. Others think it's a way to weed out the sick and feeble. Still others think it's a form of mind control or mass sterilization. So what actually are chemtrails? They're formally called contrails, and they're simply hot air and water vapor from a jet engine that freezes on contact with Earth's very cold upper atmosphere. Ta-da! Just like any engine exhaust, contrails aren't entirely harmless. They do contain carbon dioxide, nitrogen gases, sulfate particles, and soot, all forms of pollution that do contribute to climate change. But there's no proof contrails have ever contained any kind of unusual chemical or substance, and even if it did, all chemicals released at such high altitudes would be dispersed by such winds. So if a shadowy organization really did want to dose the public with something, chemtrails would be one of the least effective ways to do that.
Except the reality, people. we're not being tested on with.
Well, here's the thing. And this is, you probably don't know about this and stuff, but there have been times where the government has been behind testing people with all sorts of different things and not telling them about it. Now, is that going on today? These are things that happened quite a long time ago. Likely not, but there is some precedent to people being a bit paranoid about some of these things. But the thing is, many of these things can be easily disproven. And once we reach that point, there's nothing wrong with asking questions. But once we reach the point of saying and proving, disproving things, that's, you know, you kind of got to go with it and say, I was wrong, but I'm glad I asked the question. Now we know the answer. Deep sea monsters. The thing is, many people out there, especially people who are on the ocean, sometimes they will believe that some of these things exist. In fact, there's been some times where very strange sounds have come from the underwater portions of the ocean, and people have no idea what the hell it is, other than thinking maybe there is something down there that is we've never seen, that is very elusive, that could be not necessarily a monster per se, but some sort of species of animal that could be extremely threatening. And it is plausible. A giant portion of our oceans have never been seen by humans. The ocean is more unexplored than space. So that's kind of an interesting thing to think of. And there very likely are many things in the ocean that we do not know exist. It's relatively unexplored, and some believe it's just as mysterious as the depths of outer space. Recently, a strange phenomena seemed to give credence to the belief that an unknown terror might still lurk beneath the ocean's surface. In 1997, researchers at the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, who have been using underwater headphones to detect volcanic activity, recorded a mysterious sound in the southern Pacific Ocean. They described it as a bloop sound. Since a bloop sounded like it was made by an animal, similar to a whale's mating call, and because it originated over 5,000 kilometers from the listening station, some speculated that it was caused by a previously unknown sea monster. Okay, not that actually far off of a theory. But NOAA investigated the sound further and determined it wasn't an animal at all. By comparing the bloop's acoustics to other sound recordings taken in Antarctica, they recognized it had the same characteristics and sounds of ice calving, a.k.a. an ice quake, or the phenomenon of an iceberg breaking away from a glacier as it melts. Part of the confusion came from the fact that the original bloop recording was often replayed at 16 times the actual speed, which made it sound a lot less like a rumbling quake and more like an animal. So,
bloop.
Bloop.
That should be a book.
When in reality, it was more like...
How are you making these sounds?
I just have talents.
Hey, I also have a hidden talent.
What's that? You are pretty good at the water droplet sound. Yeah. Here's one. This is an interesting one. And I think you've even, maybe not quite, you've seen something similar to this. The Flying Dutchman ghost ship is something that people claimed they saw a ghost ship in the sky many, many years ago. Let's go through this one. And we can talk about some of the modern times. And if you've ever been on a large boat in the ocean or one of the Great Lakes, you probably have had a good chance of experiencing something very similar to this. Particularly since sailing was first invented, sailors have reported seeing mysterious floating objects on the horizon. The most famous of these is the Flying Dutchman, sightings of which likely originated in the 1600s, but persisted into the 20th century. Usually these sightings had similar details. A ghostly ship appears just over the horizon, appearing to be lit by some kind of unearthly light, usually during a storm. Sailors have theorized that this ghost ship was a former Dutch trading vessel doomed to sail the ocean for eternity, and whatever it appeared before living sailors was a bad omen. Poems about ghost ships help spread these legends even further, like Walter Scott's Rokeby or Samuel Taylor Coleridge's The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Ghost ships are just one type of unearthly object people have spotted at sea. In 1643, a Jesuit priest reported seeing a floating city over the Strait of Messina, just over the horizon. In 1810, cartographers reported seeing a floating landmass along the New Siberian Islands. In reality, reports of ghost ships, ghost cities, ghost islands are all examples of an optical illusion. It's called Fata Morganga, I think it's how it's said. The name derives from the character Morgan Le Fay, a sorceress from the legend of King Arthur, who could create building illusions. This phenomena is caused by the way our eyes perceive light when it passes through spaces with different densities. At the ocean's surface, the water keeps the air relatively cool. Above that layer of cool air is another layer of warm air. These differences in temperatures create atmospheric layers with different densities. When light passes through them, it retracts or it bends. The human eye assumes the light can see travels in a straight line. So from a distance, the refraction can make an object on the water surface appear as if it's floating above it. Most likely, superstitious sailors probably were seeing real ships. They just looked like they were floating in the air. They're very convincing, enough to be so that we can still see them from very far away. In 2015, residents of one area reported seeing a floating city in the sky. Again, just a mirage. Now, what does that mean? It means over the horizon a bit of a ways, or quite a ways, actually, there's a city, and you were seeing it, but you couldn't see it on the ground. It was a reflection, basically the optical illusion in the sky. We saw that a couple summers ago when we went over Lake Michigan, and we could see the other side of the lake. Or we thought we could see buildings on the other side of the lake. We were far too far away to truly do that. but they were kind of elevated into the sky a little bit, into the clouds. But it was that. It was this phenomena that happened, which is really neat to see, because it is very spooky and you think you are seeing. It's like, why does the horizon look like this? Like, because there's nothing on the horizon, but this is way up in the clouds. And why is it outlined so perfectly like buildings and structures? And I sat up there and I watched as we got closer and closer to the horizon line, and I could start to see Michigan. And then I could start to recognize, oh, now that all kind of faded from the sky, but where some of those structures were in the sky before, I'm actually seeing on the horizon line because we're getting physically close enough to see them. So that's how that works. It's kind of neat and something to check out if you have the opportunity to be on a boat of some sort that is making some sort of a crossing and you can't see the other side, to watch as you slowly get there to see what may be coming up. It takes the right day. It takes the right atmosphere and all that to make it work. But that was an interesting thing. I remember I pointed it out to you. You were a little bit, you were like, what? You were six or so. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, there you go. Guess a learning moment fail right there.
We'll go back onto the Badger.
You'll see it again someday. I'll show it to you.
Someday when COVID ends. That wraps up today's episode. Be sure to press the subscribe button wherever you download podcasts and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you don't ask the right questions, you may end up being part of a cautionary tale. For Cautionary Tales with Harper, I'm Harper Bursky.